Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudoux.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So in this episode, we're going to share with you a few of our favorite new tips and tricks. And this is in the spirit of always continuing to learn and always being open to new ways of improving our processes as freelancers and business people.
And before we dive into this episode, just a quick update from us. If you are listening to this around when we release it, I have two online courses which are currently open for enrollment. That's Marketing to Direct Clients, which runs for 4 weeks and starts on April 2nd. And that's for translators at any level who want to find and market to direct clients. And a French to English translation workshop, an all-new 8-week class, which starts on April 23rd with instructors Michelle Hansen, Karen Kochik, Judy Lyons, and Tom West. And also a reminder that if you listen to this podcast, you surely speak at least one other language, and you need to maintain your skills in that language in order to keep your business going. So if you don't already own Eve's book, Maintaining Your Second Language, you need it, as evidenced by multiple 5-star Amazon reviews of this book.
Woo-hoo!
So hop on over to Amazon or wherever fine books are sold. And again, the title of that is Maintaining Your Second Language.
Thanks, Corinne. So moving on to our main topic, I know that you have a couple of new tips and tricks that you're excited to share with our listeners today. And I have a bunch that I want to share too. So to get started, Corinne, what tip or trick are you currently burning to share with us as we kick this episode off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have two new techniques that I'm using, and they are both related to editing. So I am not a naturally gifted editor or proofreader, so I'm always trying to find ways to defeat my own negative tendencies or handicaps there, which is largely that I read too quickly, and I start skimming, and I miss errors. So a super helpful solution that I have found to that lately, which was motivated by feedback from other translators, is text-to-speech proofing, where the computer reads the translation to you. So, of course, you could, in a low-tech version of this, just read your translations out loud, which I used to do sometimes, but I actually think that that is prone to the same issues as proofing the text the traditional way, which is that, you know, you meant to write month and you wrote mouth, but you don't catch it because the words look so similar and you know what it's supposed to say, so you just skim over it. You know, or a word is missing and you don't catch it because you know what it's supposed to say. But when you use text to speech and you listen to the translation being read to you by the computer voice, I find that those errors really jump out because your ear hears them when your eye does not see them. So with that, you know, month mouth example, you know, when the computer voice reads to you in the second mouth of 2016, you know, you immediately catch that. Whereas for me, that's an example of an error that I would be likely to miss because I'm reading too quickly anyway, and then I know what it's supposed to say. So, you know, I don't always catch stuff like that. So the thing that has made this technique a lot easier is that text-to-speech is now built into Microsoft Word. If you have a, you know, modern-day version, like I switched probably about 6 months ago to Office 365, and it's built in. If you have Office 365, you don't need a third-party app to do it.
I have 365, too. I just wanted to say that, and I really like it. I know I've seen, like, pros and cons online, but I think that's the way it's going, and I really like that it's constantly updated, whatever. So just chiming in there, I have that, too, like Corinne. So that's
right.
Kind of seems to be the way things are going.
Yeah, that's another, you know, sort of side tip we should offer is I know that, you know, we all get sort of burnt out on software as a service because paying the subscription fees does add up versus just buying the thing and having it sit on your computer forever. But I will say that if you've ever gone through an experience like once happened to me that I got a new computer and I couldn't find the DVDs to reinstall Office. you know, I still had a valid Office subscription and I had to buy it all over again because that was before the downloadable version and I couldn't remember where I put the CDs to reinstall it.
That's what I feel like. I'm just done with that, having to track, you know, I move, I have to track all the CDs, all the DVDs. I feel like you. I'm super happy. And really, Microsoft Office is quite expensive, so it takes you at least 4 years of subscription to even put into it what you would have if you did purchase it. So, and I think they're going to get rid of it. You know, in the next five years, 10 years, we're not going to even have it available on DVD. So.
Right. So yeah, that's the thing too, is that I think it's worth saying that Microsoft Office is now pretty pricey. And like you said, when I did the math, that it's, you know, 3 to 4 years of subscriptions before you equal the price of the, you know, install one time version. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if you have a modern day version, or I can, you know, speak to what's in the Office 365 version.
Right.
In Microsoft Word, you go under the Review tab and you'll see a huge button that says Read Aloud. So you click that and then the computer voice will start reading. And they have additional voices you can download, but I would say the default one, who is named David.
Our friend David.
Yes, my now good friend David is just pleasant enough to listen to that it's not painful, but just unpleasant enough that you don't get lulled to sleep by it. So, like, it's not something that you would choose to have it read you, you know, an audiobook or something like that, but it's not excruciating to listen to. So I think an example of how useful I find this is, think about how tedious it is to proofread a list of numbers. And you're glancing back and forth, you know, we're talking about if you're not working in a TM program, you're glancing back and forth between the source and target document and, you know, like, was that 3,700,042 or what? But with text-to-speech, you look at the source text while the computer reads the target text to you. So all you have to do is keep your eyes on the source text and then match up what you're looking at to what David reads you. So, for example, the other day I was proofing a document where I had typed 2021 for a year instead of 2012. And, of course, I noticed it immediately when David read it to me because, you know, it's completely out of sync with what you're looking at in the, for me, the French document. So, same thing with names, dates, anything like that. I find that things that are particularly tedious to proofread manually are really easy to proofread with text-to-speech because you're looking at the correct version while the translation is being read to you. And again, like in a low-tech version of that, sometimes when I had to proofread particularly tedious stuff like that, I would make my husband or my daughter read them out loud to me from the French document while I looked at the translation, but now you can just get the computer to do that for you. And I think it's also worth noticing that this method of proofreading is speedy. The computer reads a bit over, you can set the speed to whatever you want, even with the, you know, basic version that comes with Office. So I feel like the medium speed is a bit over 100 words a minute. So if you were to just listen, that's 6,000 words an hour. And even if you're pausing to correct things, I'd say it's at least 3,000 words an hour, which is still a lot faster than I can manually proof. So even if you do the final proof by hand, I feel like it still saves a lot of time. And then I wrote a post about this on my blog, and people brought up the question of what other languages are available, which obviously for our profession is a big issue. So I can say French definitely is. If you have the not if you just switch Microsoft Word to French, but if you have the French language pack installed on your computer. So I'm not sure whether text-to-speech works for every language that Microsoft has a language pack for, but if anybody is listening and if you know that, or if you do a less common language and they do have a language pack for it, let us know about that. So two just funny things I'll mention there. Well, one, not funny, but obviously useful. There are also all kinds of third-party software that will do this same thing from the days before it was included with Office. So if you are looking for, you know, different features, or if the default Microsoft voice really drives you crazy, or if you do a language that Microsoft doesn't support text-to-speech for, there, you know, look online and see if you can find an external app for it. And then a funny thing I'll say that someone on my blog commented, I haven't experienced this myself, but it does sound kind of hilarious, that if you have the French language pack installed and you tell it to read you an English document, it reads it in a French accent.
Oh my gosh, that's hysterical. I have to do that now.
I thought that was inordinately funny, and I can't independently corroborate that, but two people said, yeah, the funniest thing is if you use the French read aloud voice on an English document, it reads in English with a French accent, which I thought inordinately funny. So
yeah.
Eve, over to you. How about a tip from you?
Yeah, so mine is somewhat related to yours, but kind of the flip side. So to introduce it, I want to say that a lot of us, well, I am anyway, I'm getting more and more used to doing dictation on my cell phone when I'm texting. And so that's not the tip. Yeah, if everyone's like, we know about that. Yeah, that's not the tip. That's just the intro. And I'm somewhat of a perfectionist when it comes to writing, you know, being a translator language professional and all that. But I'm a bit more lax when I'm texting on my phone because it does make mistakes. Like I'll text to my husband, you know, to do it more quickly because it is a lot faster to dictate than to type, right? And then I'll just say, like, it consistently spells my younger son's name wrong. And so I'm like, and then I'll text my husband back and say, dictating, obviously I know how to spell his name, you know, our son.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that kind of flexibility that I'm willing to give to texting is not the case when I'm using text-to-speech apps, which is what I'm going to talk about. So, Corinne, you were talking about speech to text, right?
I was talking about text to speech, and you're talking about speech to text.
Right, right, right.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think when you do that, when I'm doing speech to text in a professional setting, then I'm much more you know, exacting or whatever. I want much more than I even, but I think I was personally propelled into looking for this speech into text because now I've been doing it kind of on the side in this other way. And I think, well, gee, if I can do it there, can I do it more professionally and do some things more efficiently that way? So, what I've been looking into lately is the dictation in, so which is the opposite of what you were talking about, the dictation in Windows 10. And so far I've found it to be, I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail about that, but just kind of a general comment, I found it to be, you know, for the most part acceptable for what I've done. And what I have been doing lately is speech to text in Excel. And as I understand it, kind of like what you talked about, it can be in any MS Office application. And I think from what I've read, I haven't done it a ton in Word. It's actually more smooth in Word and a little bit easier to do and has better commands in Word. But I needed it for Excel. And I think, too, for myself, I've been a little bit slow to get on this bandwagon because, like many of us, I'm a super fast typist. I always say that... You know, I mean, I loved school and I was good at school and everything, but I always say, not jokingly, that, you know, typing class that I took in 10th grade, you know, in high school was one of the most productive classes, you know, and most useful classes that I ever took in my academic
career. It's one of the most
useful
skills that I learned. Right. I mean, I went to a great high school and learned a lot, but as far as like marketable professional skills, I took typing also back, you know, in the day when we typed on electric typewriters.
Yeah, me too.
Uh-huh, right, yeah, not even on a computer, on a typewriter, because, yeah, in the late 80s. And I actually think that is touch typing, fast touch typing is one of the professional skills that I've used the most.
Right. Yeah, and I think for me, because I type so quickly and fast and efficiently, it's kind of made me maybe a little bit late to get on the bandwagon. Like I would try over the years with different Microsoft products, and then it took way too much, you know, processing power, or it was way slower, way too prone. So I was just, you know, thought for me the tipping point wasn't there yet, where I'm very efficient and fast typist, and so now I feel like the technology has kind of caught up, and it's, you know, worth looking at again. And to just obviously, we're not talking about things like Dragon and that kind of thing here, which is a totally different topic. This is more like little tips of ways to, you know, use some of our regular software, you know, applications. So, So I had this thing just yesterday, as a matter of fact, where I had to enter many numbers into Excel. And rather than typing them, I didn't want to do that because I've done it before and it can be, it's prone to error, you know, even though I'm going to type it especially with numbers.
No, but
especially
just human transcription error.
Yeah. And so I decided I wanted to speak them and then do it that mm-hmm. way. And so that way I was also able to proof as I went. So I made less errors. There was the input, you know, I put the input with my voice and then I checked it with my eyes and then I had it, you know, accept the input or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll talk about that a little bit more. But what I wanted to say was to activate on Windows 10 and with Microsoft 365, but I think it works back with a few, not super far back, but some a little bit, you know, maybe with right before Windows 10 or whatever, too, other operating systems. So what you do is you go to Control Panel, Ease of Access, Speech Recognition, and then once you get there, it tells you, you know, it has different things for you to configure. It says, configure your speech recognition experience. So it's really an experience. So then mm-hmm. it says, you know, start speech recognition, turn it on off, set up your microphone, take a tutorial, train the computer to better understand you, and then also it has a link to open the speech reference card, which is a list of the commands that you can use. So so for me in Excel, even though I was basically entering a whole bunch of numbers, I still haven't figured out how to move from cell to cell with voice. So if anybody knows, same thing. If somebody, you can email us or put it on the comments. And I did a little bit of research, and the reference card that I mentioned that talked about the speech recognition commands mm-hmm. didn't list that. But
so to get it to like tab over or go to the next row or column,
Yeah, it's probably super obvious, but I tried things that were obvious to me, and instead it would just enter what I said, you know. Like I was like, next row, tab over.
that it would transcribe tab over, whereas like – I guess a feature of something like Dragon would be because it's intended to be used by, for example, people who can't use their hands, that you can do anything on the computer, you know, open applications, close applications, you know, do like you can literally control any feature of your computer with something like Dragon, that this is a little bit different. So that's a good point, that if anybody knows how to do things like navigate within Office using the installed feature, that would be great to know.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, and if people look at the speech reference card, it did tell how to do that type of thing within Word, for example. Or it told how to highlight a word or how to move a word.
Yeah.
But it really, that's what I was saying. Like, it can be used in Excel, but it doesn't seem like they really were thinking totally of Excel when they designed it. So, but for what I was doing, you know, like, that's what I think, listening to tips and tricks from us and from other people, it's always interesting. You have to think about, like, you know, it can be used. It might not be efficient in, you know, using it for a certain thing, but for another thing that's really narrow, it's very efficient. And for me to enter a whole bunch of numbers that took, you know, 2 hours, it was very efficient. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take 2 hours because it was a long process entering it by voice. It took a long time because there was a lot of numbers.
Because there were a lot of numbers.
So, So just thinking about, you know, even though I couldn't go from cell to cell, I just hit arrow every time, and it was still much more efficient and less tiresome and less tedious for me to do it by voice is the point. So so just saying that we need to, you know, any tips that we learn, think about, oh, how can I apply that to my specific tasks, or how would that one be most useful or whatever. So, so I wanted to say, kind of giving it a little mini review. It was pretty accurate once I got used to doing it. For me, as our listeners know, I tend to speak fast, so I had to slow down a little bit and speak like hyper clearly, which I, you know, might look kind of weird if I was talking to you. Like, the address is 2879.
Right,
I mean, I wasn't that bad, but you might talk a little more crisply than you would, you know, to a person. And then it actually in information, it talked about preceding actual digits, because I wanted it to enter actual digits and not like three, the digit three, and not write out T-H-R-E-E, right?
Right, yeah.
So it said to say numeral three, but I realized after I'd done that for a while, like it doesn't seem that bad, but when you've done it like 400 times, it was kind of tedious to say numeral.
It's kind of tiresome.
And then I realized, in Excel, actually, if I just said the number, but I was saying big numbers like, you know, 1472.11, then it actually... it did do it without saying numerals, so even though it said it would. So I mentioned that you can use it. I'm sure, I know you can use the dictation in other applications like Word, and it's even easier, and you can use it in Outlook. For me, I don't use Outlook for email. I did for years, but now I use the professional version of Gmail. And so for dictation for that, which I think email to me it would be like the perfect thing, as long as you could, you know,
right,
catch any errors that it made if you're sending to a client or whatever. I just think like that's something where I feel like, do I really have to type that out, you know?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I haven't really figured that out yet, and maybe somebody could share information about that too if they have some. So I tried out a dictation extension for Chrome, but it was too laborious. Like you had to go somewhere else and then you had to copy it and it was just kind of complicated. And so I haven't found anything great for that yet, but I'm sure it'll be coming, you know, in the next couple years. So, and I was thinking too, for a longer email, you could like dictate into Word and then paste it over, but I still think that kind of defeats the point. Unless it was a really long email, I probably wouldn't do that. I'm not going to do that for three sentences. Type it out. So, and then, like you mentioned, Corinne, I did want to talk about what Microsoft says the languages that speech recognition are available in. It's available in English for US, UK, Canada, India, and Australia. It's available for French, German, Japanese, and Mandarin, and Spanish. And for Mandarin, it's also in simplified and traditional Chinese, as well as Spanish. So, that was my first tip. So, Corinne, do you have something else you want to share with us?
Yeah, so my second one is a little bit less earth-shaking, but still useful, and it's on the same topic of, you know, sort of not exactly editing and proofreading, but similar. If you are used to using a second monitor, but you sometimes don't have access to that second monitor because you're only working on a laptop, if you have a tablet, use that as your second screen. So, for example, I work at a co-working office, and I don't even have an office in my house anymore, which I love, so I don't want to change that setup. But sometimes I'm in a situation where I have to finish work at home, or let's say I'm waiting for my daughter somewhere, like she has a judo class one night a week for an hour and a half, so it's not really worth coming home. So I generally wait for her there and try to work while I'm there. But even on a reasonable size laptop, like I have a, you know, Lenovo ThinkPad, it's a major pain to have your source and target document side by side on the screen if you're not working in a TM program. So I find if I'm working in Trados, it works fine to just work on my laptop. But for example, I do a lot of translation for individuals where I'm working from a PDF into a Word document, and the PDF is not something that lends itself to conversion. So what I do instead is load the PDF on my tablet. And by the way, I have like literally the world's cheapest tablet computer. So if this will work on an Acer Aspire, it will work on literally anything. And then I have the total screen real estate of my laptop to work on. And I put the tablet next to me, like going back to high school typing class, like, you know, as one would have done with an old fashioned, you know, typist stand. I sort of use the put the tablet, you know, angled on my left in the position that the old fashioned typist stand would have been in. And then I can translate from that onto my laptop. And I don't know, this might be something specific to me and the way I work, but I find it incredibly helpful. And especially if, because when I do translations for individuals, I am often translating from a document that is in landscape orientation. And let me tell you, if you ever want to feel like you're having a knitting needle shoved in your eye, try to have two landscape orientation documents open on your laptop screen at once.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're translating, let's say, like a diploma that are almost always in landscape orientation, it's the perfect solution. You put the diploma in landscape mode on your tablet, and then you have your landscape-oriented Word document on your laptop. So again, it's probably somewhat specific to how I work because I do quite a bit of translation for individuals because I enjoy it. But if you ever have that issue that you have gotten used to using a second monitor, it's a good option. And one thing that Eve and I learned from our friend Jonathan Hine, the freewheeling freelancer who for, I believe, 3 years, lived and worked on his bike in Europe. So didn't just take time off and go ride his bike. He actually continued actively freelancing while living on his bicycle. And a hack that he taught us along these same lines was to connect his laptop to a TV in a hotel room using, say, for example, a VGA cable. That was another thing that's like a really simple thing that had never occurred to me, that when you're traveling, you could have like the biggest screen you've ever worked on.
Right. Yeah.
By just carrying a cable and connecting your laptop to the hotel TV. So using tablet as second screen is my other tip. So Eve, let's hear another one from you.
Well, thanks, Karen. That was super interesting. Jonathan really is an inspiration. Like, we all talk about living the dream, but he lived the dream.
Really
in
did
that,
it.
Yeah, he actually, like you said, for 3 years he biked and worked. It wasn't just, yeah.
Yep.
So it's really cool. And so I'm on an Excel roll. I have another thing to tell you about Excel. I think, too, because like a lot of us, we work in Word a lot, and so do I, or at least work, even if we're working in a tool, we're working often in files that came from Word. The source file is Word. But and then when Excel comes, which I do get sometimes, it can be challenging. And so I think whenever I get Excel tools to make working with Excel easier, I just get really excited. So so I had an editing project recently, and there were many Excel files, and I had to work directly in the Excel files. I couldn't work in a tool for this particular project for the mm-hmm. way the client had it set up. And mm-hmm. so there were many files, and they had 50 or whatever. And there were many similar repetitive things that had to be corrected in them. And then sometimes, like, it would affect 10 files, but it wouldn't, then 20 of the other files, then they had a different issue or whatever, but it was the same. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it would have been very tedious and very error-prone to do each file individually. And I'm sure I would have missed things, too. And I could have, accidentally entered it wrong or whatever, because there was just so much of it or whatever. And in addition, it would have taken way too much time from my perspective. It would have just been inordinately time consuming. So, and so I thought there's got to be a better way. So I researched it, and I came upon this thing called KuTools for Excel, and it's KuTools, KuTools for Excel.
Okay.
And it's by a company called it's by a company that is called Extend Office, and that's one word, Extend Office. And I think originally there was a 60-day trial. It was either 60 or 90. It wasn't 30. So it was a really generous trial period. And mm-hmm. and in any case, the license was not that expensive. I think it was $30 or something. So cool. What was really great about it was that it let me search. So if you have one file open and it has multiple worksheets, I could at the same time search across all the worksheets in one file. So that's, exciting on its own.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but right. then
the
you
things,
could also...
The things translators get excited about.
I know. Woohoo! But then in my particular case, which that still might be very useful, but in my case in this particular project, I needed to be able to search across multiple files in multiple worksheets, and KuTools for Excel didn't disappoint me. So I was able to search across multiple worksheets in multiple files. So like I could have 25 files open, and not open, but activated in that tool or whatever. And then it was able to search multiple worksheets in the 25 files. And mm-hmm. so then when I did that, so that was search and replace, so searching, and then I could also replace things, And it shows you every single instance. I could go to every single instance if I wanted and check it out for context. And it also kind of showed like a little, it showed a certain amount of it. So sometimes I didn't even have to go directly to the cell because the little interface showed me, some text before and after. So most of the time I could get the context from that. And then I could either say, yes, correct them all, just in a batch, or, okay, I have to go through them individually because some of them are not, don't need to be corrected or whatever.
Right.
And so it was really awesome. Yeah.
That's awesome.
What's that?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I was saying, if you, like I mentioned, if you work with Excel often or really at all, I really recommend that tool highly from my experience. And the other thing is that it had a lot of other functions that I didn't have time to get into besides a search and replace for kind of, I don't know, just other different batch things you would do, inserting text out, I don't know, exporting text, different things that I didn't get into. But I feel like if those are as powerful or as helpful as the search and replace, then, you know, it's even a better tool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, did you have any other things that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I think we were going to wrap up by giving some quick picks. So just neat little things we found that we wanted to share with our listeners. So first of all, I recently learned that PayPal, which again, I use quite a bit for my work with individuals because I want them to pay in advance before I do the translation, now has a customized payment link that you can set up, sort of like Square Cash has had for a while. So instead of having to create an invoice for someone or they have to log into their own PayPal account, you just send them this link with the dollar amount appended to it. So it's like the feature is called PayPal.me. So it's PayPal.me, then you can customize what comes after that. So for example, PayPal.me/Corinne McKay, and then you just append the dollar amount to whatever your PayPal.me link is once you create it. So you log into your own PayPal account, create a PayPal.me link with your name or your company name or whatever, and then whenever you want to request money from someone, you just send them that link with the dollar amount appended to it. So like PayPal.me/Corinne McKay/100. And the person clicks it to send you $100. So by the way, if anyone wants to send me $100, that's
yeah.
how you would do it.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, right. It's like on Car Talk about they used to say, write your question on the back of a $20 bill.
Right. So, send it to us. Right.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone wants to send me $100, that's how you would
do
it.
There you go.
So yeah, I use PayPal for a lot of individuals, and I will say that despite the associated fees, I'm trying to move to mostly electronic payments through a variety of methods, so I was excited to find out about this.
Great.
Then my second one is a free online course for aspiring conference interpreters. Mm-hmm. So one of my personal goals, or one of my, you know, personal professional goals, is to work on my interpreting skills. And a shout out to Tamara Moroila, who is a Spanish translator interpreter in the UK, and she teaches in the conference interpreting program at the University of Leeds. So this course or this program is called ORCIT, O-R-C-I-T, which stands for Online Resources for Conference Interpreter Training. It's funded by the European Commission, and it is, and their website is orcit.eu. I'll put that in the show notes, but it's orcit.eu. So it is a free self-paced online course for conference interpreters, which combines, it has both very extensive video lessons, as if you were sitting in a classroom, and then it has self-paced exercises that you can do as well. And one of the really cool things is that the course itself is available in English, Czech, French, German, Greek,
wow.
Lithuanian, Slovenian, and Spanish.
Nice.
So, for example, I'm doing the conference interpreting course itself in French, which is a double benefit because I get to practice my French mm-hmm. skills, you know, my B language skills, and my interpreting skills. But I think for anyone who is interested in either dipping their toe in conference interpreting or brushing up their conference interpreting skills, it's a fantastic resource and it's free. Thank you,
nice.
European Commission.
Yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Eve, any quick picks from you?
Yeah, I have two. One is quicker than the other, but I'll make it quick. The first one is just that I tweeted recently about, I did a big transcription job and I tweeted about it, and people seem to be surprised about the pedal, so I wanted to talk about that quickly. So if you do transcription, or if you're interested in doing transcription for your clients, you know, multilingual transcription, there's different keyboard shortcuts that are available for most applications that play a video and audio. However, I would suggest if you want to get in transcription or you do transcription and you don't yet use it, you should use a pedal. So I have what's called an Infinity USB digital foot control, and it has a USB connects to my computer, but there's lots of different pedals out there. That's just the one I have as an example. And I also use Express Scribe transcription software, which is, again, like $30 or something. And what's really cool about that is it lets you play video or audio at the same time that you're actually active in another application. Because often, you know, we have to, if you're activating an application and you have multiple windows or multiple screens open, you have to click.
Right.
Yeah, you have to click over to activate that. But this doesn't work like that. If you're using the pedal and you're also using something like Express Scribe transcription, then you can control the video or the audio, and at the same time, you can also stay active in the Word document or whatever you're typing in. And so with the pedal, you go forward, you can go backward, you know, fast forward, slow forward, or stop, start.
It's like an old-fashioned dictaphone. Again,
exactly.
Talking about, back to the days of all of that stuff. So it's like the digital, the 21st century equivalent of a dictaphone.
Yeah, and that brings me to exactly my next point, which was that I worked at a law firm many years ago, and what we called at the time secretaries, which now is not the PC term, but we did use that term back then, but now we would say the admins, you know, they would transcribe dictation from the attorneys this way, and I just was impressed at how quickly they did it and how fast it was, so that kind of always stuck with me. So when I started doing transcription, I was like, there's got to be a better way where, you know, you can do it with a pedal, and it really is much more efficient, because I know people, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I just think, I mean, a little, you know, stealth business tip would be transcription, if you enjoy it, is a good service to offer because lots of people hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a good thing to add to your service offerings because lots of people don't enjoy it.
Yeah. And I actually like it. I like doing it. I think it's fun. And I think that, and most of the time, I mean, like if the audio or video is really bad, then no, it's not fun for anybody. But
yeah.
In general, I like it. You get interesting topics and, you know, and it's interesting. And usually what I do is it's basically transcription translation, just directly from French into English. So I personally don't do French, you know, French translation into French. That would be someone else doing that native.
But you're like translating on the fly as you listen to it.
Yes. And I've also done, for certain projects, once in a while, there's been something worth English, but I don't love doing that. I like it doing it when it's, you know, has the multilingual component, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then, so I was going to say, what I was going to say earlier was that some people might think or say, you know, well, you can do the shortcut keys, and you can, but it still is, I found, at least for me anyway, it's quite a bit faster and more efficient if you're doing it with your foot instead of using your hands. So, So my tip is, like Corinne said, if you do any video or audio, get a good pedal and a good transcription software application.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other quick pick is, I've kind of known about this off and on over the years, and then I forget it. So people might know it, but if they knew it, they might have forgotten it like me, so I want to remind people. It's just the simple thing that you can highlight non-contiguous text in Word. And I think that's so helpful. So what I mean is, it's not like normally, I'm sure everybody is like fast. They're like, okay, I want to highlight the whole sentence. So I do, you know, whatever. I can't even do it. My fingers just do it without me even knowing what I'm doing. It's like control shift end or something like that. Right. And then, but you can also, but that's linear, or you can go, you know, highlight a whole paragraph or something like that.
Whole paragraph. Yeah.
Also,
right.
Yeah. But if you hit Alt Shift Control, you can just kind of do it. It's still contiguous in a way, but it's not linear. So you could do, you know, 3 words on one sentence and then 2 words on the next one below and then 4 words on the next sentence below. So it's kind of like just how you drag it.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah.
I had no idea about that either.
Yeah. And so you might think, well, what good does that do? But sometimes, I can't think of an example now, but it does come in handy. And I did use it for something the other day, and I was like, I know I can do that, and how do I do it again? And so once in a while, that comes in handy. So to do it, to do a nonlinear highlighting of text where you can then copy, paste it, do whatever you want to it, or, you know, bold it, italics, whatever, is it's Alt-Shift-Control on a PC, on a Windows machine.
Alt-Shift-Control. Huh, cool.
And then you move your mouse around.
then you do that. So you hit Alt Shift Control, and then it's in like non-continuous highlight mode. And
yeah.
whatever you highlight, it'll highlight as one block of text, basically.
Yeah, so I'm doing it as we're speaking, and I'm doing like, you know, not linearly, but text that's below and above itself, you know,
right,
at the same time.
Right, right. That's cool. Well, and I would think, I mean, here's an example of how you might use that. Let's say you have a word that you decide that you want, like, you know, chief technical officer, and you decide that you want that with initial caps and you didn't type it that way. You could highlight the instances of that and then go up on your toolbar and change it to initial caps, and it would change all the ones you highlighted.
Right, exactly. Yes, yes, that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at first you might think, okay, well, what is that good for? But there are always, like
right.
I said, you just have to think of how
yes.
to apply the cool tips that, you know, others give to you or we give to you or we learn from other people.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So I just wanted to say that one thing is we can, if people are interested, put an example of that up on the show notes.
In the show
anyway.
Notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think, though, that's all of our tips for this episode. And I also wanted to say that we have lots of ideas for future episodes. We're always kind of collaborating on that. And obviously, we could talk about translation all day. But I did want to say to our listeners, I know, I did want to say to our listeners, if you have an idea for a future episode of a topic that you're interested in, we're interested in hearing about it. So send us an email at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com, or you can contact us through our website. For personal websites too, but you can go to the website for the podcast, which is speakingoftranslation.com.
Yeah.
And in any case, we'll see you next time.
Yeah, great. Thanks everyone for joining us. And we got lots of positive feedback on last month's Ask Us Anything episode. So I think we'll certainly be doing that again. We got lots of questions and it seemed like the answers were helpful. So perhaps we'll plan on doing that a few times a year. So thanks for joining us. And if you are listening to this via our website, just a reminder that you can now subscribe to us in iTunes as well if you'd like to get the episodes in your feed directly. So thanks, and we will talk to you in our next episode of Speaking of Translation.